This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
It's time for Muslim Chaplaincy Conversation at ORFM Dunedin.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. In the name of God, most gracious, most merciful. Assalamu alaikum, which means peace be with you in Arabic. My name is Arina Aizal, and I'll be your host for the Muslim Chaplaincy Conversation. In today's episode, we have a talk on the consumerism trap and Islam's response, and an interview with Brother Ahmad Al-Din Al-Said, an international graduate student at University of Otago. We begin, though, with a recitation of the Quran by Sheikh Mashari Al-Fash, chapters 7, verses 29 to 34, which relate to the topic of the talk.
قُلْ أَمَرَ رَبِّي بِالْقِسْطِ وَأَقِيمُوا وُجُوهَكُمْ عِنْدَ كُلِّ مَسْجِدٍ وَادْعُوهُ مُخْلِصِينَ لَهُ الدِّينَ كَمَا بَدَأَكُمْ تَعُودُونَ فَرِيقًا هَدَى وَفَرِيقًا حَقَّ عَلَيْهِمُ الضَّلَالَةُ إِنَّهُمُ اتَّخَذُوا الشَّيَاطِينَ أَوْلِيَاءَ مِنْ دُونِ اللَّهِ وَيَحْسَبُونَ أَنَّهُمْ مُهْتَدُونَ يَا بَنِي آدم خذوا زينتكم عند كل مسجد وكلوا واشربوا ولا تسرفوا إنه لا يحب المسرفين قل من حرم زينة الله التي أخرج لعباده والطيبات من الرزق قل هي للذين آمنوا في الحياة الدنيا خالصة يوم القيامة كذلك نفصل الآيات لقوم يعلمون قل إنما حرم ربي الفواحش ما ظهر منها وما بطن والإثم والبغي بغير الحق وأن تشركوا بالله ما لم ينزل به سلطانا وأن تقولوا على الله ما لا تعلمون ولكل أمة أجل فإذا جاء أجلهم لا يستأخرون ساعة ولا يستقدمون.
Translation of the recited verses. In the name of God, most gracious, most merciful. Say, Prophet, my Lord commands righteousness. Direct your worship straight to Him, just as He first created you, so you will come back to life again. Some He has guided, and some are doomed to stray. They have taken evil ones rather than God as their masters, thinking that they are rightly guided. Children of Adam, dress well whenever you are at worship, and eat and drink as we have permitted, but do not be extravagant. God does not like extravagant person. Extravagant people. Say, Prophet, who has forbidden the adornment and the nourishment God has provided for His servants. Say, they are allowed for those who believe during the life of this world. They will be theirs alone on the day of resurrection. This is how we make our revelation clear for those who understand. Say, Prophet, my Lord only forbids disgraceful deeds, whether they be open or hidden, and sin and unjustified aggression, and that you, without his sanction, associate things with him, and that you say things about him without knowledge. There is a time set for every people. They cannot hasten it, nor, when it comes, will they be able to delay it for a single moment. In this section of the program, Dr. Najib Lafray talks about the consumerism trap and Islam's response.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. I begin this talk with a quote. There is all around us today a kind of fantastic conspicuousness of consumption and abundance, constituted by the multiplication of objects, services, and material goods, and this represents something of a fundamental mutation in the ecology of the human species. Strictly speaking, the humans of the age of affluence are surrounded not so much by other human beings as they were in all previous ages, but by objects. Their daily dealings are now not so much with their fellow men, but rather on a rising statistical curve with the reception and manipulation of goods and messages. End of quote. This is how a French philosopher and sociologist begins his early 1970s book on the consumer society. This is the title, The Consumer Society, Myths and Structures. Remember, this is before the age of personal computer, cell phone, the internet, and social media. If that was the situation some 50 years ago, imagine what has it become now. The affluence mentioned in the quote has not spread around the world, but the consumer culture has been exported to most parts of the globe, turning them into consumer societies. In this talk, first I'll describe what consumerism and consumer society are, and then Islam's view on the issue. Interestingly, a historian writing on the Ottoman Empire argues that, quote, the Ottomans led one of the world's earliest consumer revolutions, end of quote, in the early 16th century when they introduced the Yemeni coffee to the rest of the world and, again, quote, spurred capitalist consumerism through their invention of the coffee house, end of quote. This may be true, but the type of consumerism promoted by the coffee house is very different from the one the French philosopher talks about. The consumerism he refers to has been defined as, quote unquote, the lure of material goods, and it entails the belief that happiness requires acquiring goods and services in an ever-increasing amount. A British sociologist defines consumerism as, quote, a set of beliefs and values integral but not exclusive to the system of capitalist globalization intended to make people believe that human worth is best ensured and happiness is best achieved in terms of our consumption and possessions, end of quote. Thus, in a consumer culture, being a consumer becomes the main marker of identity. Consuming and possessing more good go hand in hand with fashion and brand names. It's not just enough to have plenty of clothes and gadgets, but they need to be of certain brands. The manufacturers design the products in a way to have a limited lifespan and to make repairing them almost impossible. Thus, we are forced to replace what we bought only a few years ago, even if we do not fall in the trap of swapping our perfectly fine items with the latest version that have some additional features. Moreover, in a consumer society, and again quote, many of the activities of everyday life are dominated by the consumption of goods and experiences in a variety of sites such as malls, city centers, department stores, theme parks, tourist resorts, heritage centers, which offer a range of stimulations, spectacular spaces, and sign play. End of quote. The consumerism mentioned above emerged in Europe and the US towards the end of the 19th century, when the use of new technologies led to overproduction without enough people to buy them. That made the capitalists resort to various tactics to convince people to buy goods even if they did not need them. Thus, we have the birth of modern marketing, a task of which is to generate, quote-unquote, a new ideology of pleasure and leisure in order to achieve the above aim. Advertising plays an important role in this. Modern advertising emerged in the second half of the 19th century, and new techniques were introduced in the 1920s. According to a scholar, quote, the importance of advertising is not that it invariably succeeds in its immediate purpose, but simply that it surrounds people with images of the good life, in which happiness depends on consumption. The ubiquity of such images, and ubiquity means the state or capacity of being everywhere, especially at the same time. The ubiquity of such images leaves little space for competing conceptions of the good life. End of quote. Other contributing factors to consumerism were the invention of department store in Britain in the mid-19th century and the shopping mall in the U.S. in the 20th century. The media representation of wealthy lifestyle, especially on TV, also plays an important role in that. The invention of credit card in the U.S. in the 1940s took consumerism to new heights. Now people could easily purchase goods and services not only beyond their needs, but also beyond their means, with the hope that they will pay for it in the future, a hope that is rarely realized. In the U.S., the total consumer debt in 2020 reached close to $15 trillion, $15,000 billion. And the average individual debt was over $92,000. Now, about Islam's view on consumerism. First, it should be noted the Noble Quran condemns the human tendency to have more and more, be it material goods, power, prestige, or whatever. And I quote, "You are obsessed by greed for more and more until you go down to your graves. No, in time you will come to know. No, indeed, in the end you will come to know. No, indeed, if only you know for certain, you will most certainly see hellfire." These were verses 1 to 6, chapter 102. But this does not mean that Islam does not allow enjoyment of the good things of life. The Noble Quran is clear that there is nothing wrong per se in utilizing the available goods and services. Quote, "Say, Prophet, who has forbidden the adornment and nourishment God has provided for his servants? Say, they are allowed for those who believe during the life of this world. They will be theirs alone on the day of resurrection." Verse 32, chapter 7. Another verse advises, "Seek the life to come by means of what God has granted you, but do not neglect your rightful share in this world. Verse 77, chapter 28. Both these verses, while allowing the enjoyment of goods and services, put limitation to it. Namely, the real goal should be seeking the life to come, not just the enjoyment in this life. A Muslim couple specializing in marketing, and interestingly, both of them studied at Otago University and now teach at universities in the Gulf, have developed a model according to which Muslim consumers see the goods and services as blessings from God and return their enjoyment with acts of worship. For the secular consumer, though, and I quote from their paper, when goods and services are first received, they can affect the receiver synergically. They transform the blessing from simply good and service to something more meaningful to the consumer, an extension of the self, a vehicle for conspicuous consumption, a status marker, etc. In this way, it is as if the consumer is joined to or emerged with the good or service through its communicated positioning, the quote-unquote brand personality, or the other sign aspects of the good or service that the consumer wants to reflect. End of quote. Seeing goods and services as blessings from God and seeing the life to come through them require Muslims to be always vigilant, not only that they do not become a marker of their identity, but also that enjoying them does not violate Islamic teachings. The most important consideration is making sure that utilizing the goods and services is in accordance with the Islamic ethical principles and does not breach rulings of Islamic law. Avoidance of purchasing goods and services based on debt with interest, which is forbidden in Islam, is a clear example. Being mindful of our social responsibilities is another example. The Prophet, peace be upon him, is reported to have said, quote, "One who spends the night with a full stomach while his neighbor is hungry has not believed in me. One who spends the night clothed while his neighbor has no clothes has not believed in me." End of quote. Thus, how can we enjoy things that are not essential while others in our community suffer hardship? Making sure that the goods and services we use are not only halal, which means lawful, but also tayyib, which means pure and wholesome, both of which have been emphasized in the Quran and the Hadith, is also important. Animals raised in factory farms or ill-treated may be technically halal, but they are certainly not tayyib. The same would apply to the products manufactured by forced labor, child labor, or other exploitative conditions. Another important consideration in regard to the use of goods and services is wastefulness. Moderation in all aspects of life has been emphasized in the Quran and the Sunnah of the Prophet. The Noble Quran also warns over and over about wastefulness and notes that, quote, "God does not like extravagant people." Verse 31, chapter 7. Another verse states, quote, "Those who squander are brothers of Satan, and Satan is most ungrateful to his Lord." Verse 27, chapter 17. The Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, also warned against wastefulness, to the extent that he advised his companions, quote, "Do not waste water, even if performing ablution on the bank of a fast-flowing large river." End of quote. And we should tell this to us, going under a shower and staying there for half an hour or more. In contrast to what Islam teaches, the wastefulness associated with today's consumerism is staggering. It's not only the amount of trash that is generated, often consisting of perfectly fine goods or edible food, but also the amount of pressure natural resources used for their production. Thus, and I quote from the paper, most of the waste generation in a consumer society occurs during the extraction, processing, or manufacturing stages. These impacts are normally hidden from consumers, end of quote. And the author gives the example of making a quarter pound beef burger requiring 600 gallons of water. Making a quarter pound beef burger requiring 600 gallons of water, or producing a consumer chip generating 4,500 times its weight in waste. In brief, in today's world, we all live in consumer societies. And the consumer culture is so pervasive that there is no escape from it. A Muslim can minimize its negative impacts, which are huge, by always remembering their purpose of life, seeing the goods and services available to them as blessings from God, and making sure that in their production as well as utilization, ethical principles and rulings of Islamic law are observed. Amin Allah Tawfiq. May Allah grant us the ability to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Najib. Now, we listen to an Islamic song by Mahe Zain entitled Anta Salam, You Are the Peace.
Destiny, I'll be alright. I'm sure that you look after me. You know what? what's inside of me. All my life, I know you've been blessing me. You're the only one, the one who knows my destiny. I'll be alright, I'm sure that you look after me. You know what's inside of me. And the salam, wa minka salam.
Assalamualaikum, Brother Iman. Thank you for being here today for our show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. It's a pleasure to be here with you, Sister Arena.
Thank you. Would you mind introducing yourself to our listeners?
Yeah. Thank you very much, Sister Arena, for having me in your segment. And it's really an honor to be here and to interact with the Dunedin Muslim community as well. My name is Imad al-Din al-Sayed. I am a teaching tutor or lecturer at the University of Jazan, Bakum in Saudi Arabia. Yeah, I'm working at the Faculty of Applied Medical Sciences in the Department of Clinical Nutrition. Yeah, and now I'm just as a student here in Dunedin.
Thank you for that. Would you mind telling us about growing up in Saudi Arabia?
Yeah. Actually, I was born and lived in Jazan, which lies in the southeast corner of Saudi Arabia and directly north of the border with Yemen, which is situated on the coast of the Red Sea and serves like a large agricultural heartland for Saudi Arabia. Yeah. Jazan is like noted as a very high agricultural place in Saudi Arabia and served like all around Saudi Arabia with like fruit and vegetable as well, with like the, what you call it, the climate in there. It's almost like coastal. Yeah. I grew up in a big family of 10. You may be surprised of that. Yeah, because it's almost the average number in Saudi Arabia to have like a family of 10. But I think not nowadays. It's not very common. My parents and 2 sisters and 5 brothers. Yeah, I'm a bit happy to grow up in a big family. And I went throughout my education until university in my hometown. And then I moved to Otago for my postgraduate studies. Yeah, I was interested in doing like health-related topics. After studying 1 year and like foundation year in here, yeah, then I've been like accepted. I was accepted to doing like clinical nutrition studies, as yeah, it was like of my interest to do like clinical nutrition because of both companies. At my time, there was nothing in there. So yeah, it just came to my mind how like all food companies was like contributing to all health related problem in there. So yeah, I could do it.
Have you always wanted to be somewhere in that field since you were young during school?
Yeah, actually, I was like fat guy throughout my like childhood and almost like my teenage years as well. So I tried to manage it and solve the problem, to be honest. Yeah, and then I did it with like my interest as well.
What about school in Saudi Arabia? How was that experience?
Yeah, it was like amazing because I went through my primary and secondary school, which was like 2 minutes far away from my home. So I walked every day to there and did all my studies. And the best part of it, it was like mandatory to do like religious study in there, which they tried to teach us how to recite the Quran properly and all like religious part of Islam. And yeah, it was quite interesting. Yeah, and then I moved to high school. It was a bit far from my home, and yeah, I had to walk like about 20 to 30 minutes, which helped me to reduce a bit of weight at that time. Mm. Yeah, and finally, I graduated from high school, like from the top 10 students at high school. Yeah. Ah. Best period of my life in high school, to be honest.
Mm.
Yeah.
What about religious studies? Did you get that throughout your education?
Yeah, I actually, religious study in Saudi Arabia, it's mandatory even though in at university as well. You cannot like graduate. You have to do like at least one course of religious study each semester. And apart from the mandatory like courses, a bit lucky to have my parents, my dad, rahimahullah, and my mom as well. They used to like recite Quran at home ever since, and then because whenever they got like free time, they used to like teach us, and they sent us like every day after Asr, and from after we finished school and pray Asr at home, they sent us like to a mosque where we used to have like halaqah, which is like a group session how to recite Quran and how to memorize it. And yeah, giving us like every week like a concept of Islam and all the related parts of Islam.
Mm, that's great. What were your favorite childhood memories?
Well, I think my favorite, it was about my dad, rahimahullah, used to like gather all of my brothers, sisters, and like my neighbors, and went to picnic every week. Mm-hmm. We gather every week, going to playground and making some competition as well, running, playing football. Yeah, I used to be like a goalkeeper there. Yeah,
and you have so many siblings, so that must be really fun.
Yeah, yeah, it does indeed, because yeah, I'm missing them a lot though, because yeah, I'm stuck here in New Zealand the last 2 years and never seen them well, in 2 years, which is quite a long time for me and for us as well, because they used to call me like almost every day.
Mm.
Yeah, we are like a family based in Saudi Arabia, as almost like in Western countries, in Gulf countries as well.
Yeah. So after school, you came to, sorry, after school, you had your higher education in Saudi Arabia as well. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, yes. Actually, it was a big change for me because we used to have all the studies from primary to high school just in Arabic language.
Mm.
But just only one course each semester in English. And then suddenly we moved from Arabic courses to full English courses. Yeah, it was a big shock for me. And yeah, hopefully I did it and did like some courses overseas. Yeah, I think that's quite helpful for me. And yeah, and then I moved to, I did like 1 year of foundation year.
Mm.
The year was full of science and like physics, chemistry, and biology as the health science in here. But we used to call it like foundation year.
Mm.
Yeah.
And after university, did you go to any work?
Yes. I was like quite lucky to did 1 year of internship in clinical nutrition at hospital.
Mm.
at three different hospitals, to be honest. And then I did like 2 years working as clinical dietitian back home in Saudi Arabia. After that, I just moved to university as teaching tutor or lecturer for 1 year as well. And I did like, I got scholarship to do my further studies just to promote all of my career back home in Saudi Arabia.
So a lot has happened since then.
Yeah, a lot.
Can you tell us about your master's degree at Otago?
Well, this was like a big challenge for me to like leave Islamic country to go to a Western country to do like further studies, especially in New Zealand with such different education system in here. Yeah. Hopefully I came to New Zealand back to 2018 in August, and I started doing English studies here because I had to fulfill my English requirements for the university. Mm. It's like almost 8 to 9 months of English course at the language center at Otago University.
Mm.
Yeah. And then I enrolled in postgrad diploma majoring in human science and human nutrition, sorry.
Mm. Yeah.
And I hopefully got like all the requirements to do a master's degree in here. Yeah, in the same topic, which is human nutrition.
Was it under a scholarship or personal funding?
Yeah, hopefully I got like a scholarship from my the university I'm working at in Saudi Arabia. Funded to just finish my postgraduate studies in here to get promoted as a lecturer.
Can you tell us about your research?
Well, it was a quite interesting research. Yeah, and as you may know, there's like a worldwide movement toward like plant-based diets or vegetarian.
Plant-based diets. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And this is like increasing in parallel with growing concern about the environment, sustainability and human health. What I did is to distinguish between animal-based food and plant-based foods in adolescent females in New Zealand. Yeah, as you know, adolescent girls may be particularly at risk as they have increased requirement for such important nutrients such as iron, zinc, and calcium, and absolutely vitamin B12. If they are like following vegetarian dietary patterns, which is like in the fruit and vegetable, you can find it only in meat or animal products.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this age is like a critical stage of life as physical growth and development reach their peak for girls. And the optimal nutrition is needed to maintain the normal growth. So what we found in this study is vegetarian. Actually, I'm just going to introduce to my research, which was the proportion of plant-based food in the diet of adolescent females in New Zealand. What I did is I deconstruct like participant diet into either plant or animal, which was quite difficult. I spent like 7 months of data cleaning just to go through each single food they consume. Could it add whether it's animal or plant? And we found like vegetarian consumed like an hour proportion of total energy from protein, which is a concern for this critical age because they are at the rich peak of their growth and they need like protein to build their muscles and their body.
Yeah.
And they consume quite a lot of like carbohydrates compared to like regular people, or what we call omnivores. Yeah, also vegetarian had a lower intake of vitamin B12 and zinc, with a high fiber intake compared to omnivores, but still it's within the acceptable range. However, vegan, which is the concern of like vegetarian dietary patterns, because vegan, they do not consume any animal products. Yeah. They had like a quite low vitamin B12 intake. So it may like get assigned to just let them to an alternative to get like vitamin B12 in their medicine or like some injection. The quite interesting finding of this study is that with this coding, we can like assess the energy contribution from plants in a person's diet. This finding was a notable finding arising from my study, which was the considerable overlap in energy sources between people who still identified themselves either omnivores or vegetarian. In very simple words, many omnivores who eat meat and animal products consumed more plant-based food than some vegetarian, which was like quite interesting of my study here. And vice versa, that many vegetarians consume more animal products than omnivores. It's like unexpected. It was like unpredicted like finding to have it here. But yeah, we find this one. And the extreme of this spectrum of that some vegetarians were consuming only around half of their energy from plants, with some omnivores consuming almost like 80% of their energy from plants. So this like gives us a sign. If you are like vegetarian, it doesn't mean that you are healthy. So even though omnivores are eating like, they consider themselves as omnivores and eating meat and all stuff, but yet still they are consuming much more of their energy from plants, fruit and vegetable, legumes and pulses and tubers as well. So this is a good sign that we just need to encourage people to increase it toward like almost like 90 or 95% of their energy, just to improve their health and sustainability as well.
That's very interesting. Thank you for sharing that. Let's talk about your life in New Zealand. What was it like adjusting to the new society? Because you did mention that it was hard for you from a Islamic country to a Western country.
Well, this is like quite interesting for me as well, because I'm a big fan of like nature and environment. And there's no comparison like between Saudi Arabia environment and New Zealand. We used to live like in such hot climate in there. And just more extreme cold weather here in Dunedin. But yeah, I really like the cold weather. But yeah, in terms like of cultural stuff, we used to have like daily meeting back home in Saudi Arabia after either Maghrib or Isha prayer. We used to have like gathering to have like dinner together and at least have like small talk just beside the mosque. We used to like gather ever since, and then after pray, either us in Maghrib or Russia. But here in New Zealand, because especially here in Dunedin, there's only one mosque, as you may know that. And it's really hard to find like everybody who's like praying all the five times there, because they are almost international students and they're stuck at university or somewhere. So yeah, I found it quite difficult here, and I used to just change all my free time just to do some exercises.
Yeah. What about traveling around New Zealand? Have you got a chance to do that?
Hopefully, I did last week. I did my best ever trip in New Zealand. I went from Dunedin down to Tiano, and then Milford Sound, Queenstown, Wanaka, Christchurch, and left a couple as well. They are all pretty and have like such different scenery and such different environment as well. But the most like enjoyable and unforgettable place is Milford Sound, which is my favorite place. And kind of forget the scenery around the like, lakes and mountains and all the places there. And it was like my first time just to see snow and touch snow, playing with snow as well.
Yeah, it is wonderful. So you've studied in both New Zealand and Saudi Arabia. Can you tell us some comparisons between the universities?
Well, I studied in both countries and I think they are quite different because back home in Saudi Arabia, we used to have only lectures and slides like from lecturer, and then we just need to pass like exams and that's it. But here in New Zealand, what I find like quite hard here to is like self-learning. You have to go through your topic, you have to find the proper like articles and research, and you have to see the literature as well. Yes, but I think both of them, they are like quite similar, because even though in Saudi Arabia they just, it's what they call it like spoon feeding education, but still they giving like all recent like information in the slides and lecture as well. So both like are quite like
beneficial. Yeah, different. So as an international student, have you found the university's facilities helpful for you?
Yeah. Actually, most all of the facilities here are quite like helpful, especially like uni pool, which where I used to like spend most of my free time in there, like playing cardio, badminton, billiards, and all stuff. Yeah, and another one is Central Library, where people used to see me in there. And whenever I don't go like to Central Library, they just ring me. Hey, Matt, are you okay? Yeah, because I'm living here alone, and I used to keep all of my free time, yeah, just reading at Central Library and writing my research as well.
Yeah, that's good that you have friends who support you like that, who check up on you.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I used to contact with all, like, international and especially, like, Muslims, because I used to see them at least 3 or 5 times a day, like, either in mosque, at mosque or in the prayer room in Central Library. And we have, like, small talks at school.
What do you think about the Muslim community here in Dunedin? You did mention about the mosque. How did you find some of the activities?
Yeah, actually, mosque, like, doing a great job for, like, Muslims here in Dunedin. Apart from, like, pandemic and living long, like, little too, we cannot, like, do some activities at the mosque. But when it was, like, level one, there was, like, such great activities, and they used to have like barbecues and playing volleyball, especially during Ramadan after our prayer. And they encouraging even people to overcome with this pandemic at the moment, to just encourage them to be vaccinated as well as soon as possible.
Yeah, I'm sure you know about the Muslim chaplaincy. Can you tell us about the resource?
To be honest, I never come across like with the Muslim chaplaincy, but I made some research and always used to like listen to the radio, especially like this radio. I'm used to like listening to others here, and how life goes with them. I think it's quite helpful to just being connected as Muslim here.
How do you think we should encourage students to contact the Muslim chaplaincy and use the resources more?
Well, I think the best thing is to use the prayer room like in Central Library, because most Muslim like students used to pray at their time in there in Central Library. And I found it from there. For myself, I found like Muslim chaplaincy from there and started like reading about it and listening to the radio. I think it's the best place for them.
So before we wrap this conversation, as a Muslim international student, I think you've had a lot of experiences adjusting to culture and everything. Do you have a message for the other Muslim international students who might be having other challenges here?
Well, actually, I used to call them like my brothers here. And they are in India. They are my brothers. Actually, my message to them, just approach other Muslims, especially when you can see like there's such problem or he's like depressed or something like that, just please approach him or her and say salam alaikum, how's life goes with you and all stuff, you know. We need to look united and help each other, look after each other as well. And the best message, as messenger used to say, fear of God, where and whenever you just need to do something, just being in contact with God.
Lastly, what are your future plans? What are the things that you're looking forward to?
Well, I'm looking forward to see my family back. I think it's going to come on Monday. I booked my flight last night.
Oh, you're leaving?
Yeah.
Very soon.
It's heartbreak to leave like Muslim community in here. As well as my family in here. My future plans. To look after my mom. And see my son again. The first thing I'm going to do it, just to arrange Hajj, inshallah, coming year. I'm going to teach over there in Saudi Arabia in the clinical nutrition department. Meantime, I'm planning to prepare all stuff for Hajj, inshallah.
Inshallah.
And pray to all Muslim community here in New Zealand. Pray to do my PhD soon, inshallah.
You have so many things to look forward to, and I'm really glad we got to talk to you before you leave.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be with you, Sister Arina.
Thank you so much. We'll see you again. And that is the end of our program today. Thank you for your time. Special thank you to RFM for facilitating the production of this program. I should add that the views expressed in this podcast do not necessarily represent the views of Otago Muslim Chaplaincy as such. If you have any questions, please email muslimchaplaincy@otago.ac.nz. We hope to see you next time, inshallah. God willing, assalamualaikum. You've been listening to Muslim Chaplaincy Conversation at OARFM Dunedin.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.